Good morning. It's Tuesday, July 25th, 2006. I'm Becca Bartleson.
And I'm Brian Smith. Coming up on this morning's news, Portland is hosting an open source software convention this week.
Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter says that by the end of the week, he will have a bill allowing Congress to sue George Bush in federal court.
And Saudi Arabia is appealing to the rest of the world to stop the Israeli attacks on Lebanon.
Portland area weather today, areas of morning clouds, otherwise sunny, possible isolated thunderstorms in the afternoon, temperatures in the mid to high 80s inland, 60 to 70 on the coast, tonight mostly cloudy and breezy, possibly evening thunderstorms, temperatures 55 to 60. Two groups in Glenview, Illinois, have pumped more than $1 million into Oregon ballot initiatives that would reimpose term limits and limit state spending. New campaign finance report says U.S. term limits contributed $510,000 on the Oregon term limits initiative, almost all the money spent so far by that campaign. Supporters of the spending limit initiative have spent more than $671,000 to qualify that measure. All but $100,000 of that came from Americans for Limited Government, another group from Glenview. Five other initiative campaigns reported more than $300,000 spending, including measures that would establish an open primary, change the way appellate court judges are elected, require notice to parents of teens seeking abortions, expand a state prescription drug program, and make access to health care a fundamental right in the Oregon Constitution.
And Oregon Secretary of State Bill Bradbury said yesterday that petition gatherers in this year's initiative campaigns have been sloppy. He said that in one case, 1,800 petition sheets for an initiative to impose term limits on office holders were submitted along with those for an initiative to limit state spending, resulting in the disqualification of up to 15,000 signatures. Bradbury didn't mention any other specific campaigns in a statement that said, in any other business, this would be a gross negligence. Bradbury said he asked the legislature to require training for the people who carry petitions, and he would repeat the request when the legislature meets next year. Petitions for both the term and the spending limits initiatives are being passed by carriers for a California company, Arno Political Consultants. In June, Bradbury's elections division said the company's method of compensating petition carriers appears to violate the state ban on paying per signature.
In Portland, the O'Reilly Open Source Convention, OSCON, began yesterday at the Oregon Convention Center. It will run through Friday. OSCON is not just the premier North American conference for open source software developers. OSCON is increasingly a showcase for Oregon's burgeoning open technology industry. There is no denying the increasing viability of Oregon among open source press, analysts, and industrial players. The Portland Open Source Software Entrepreneurs, Posse, and FreeGeek are major participants. Many of Oregon's open source companies and organizations will be on display at OSCON. In addition to speakers from Beaverton's Open Source Development Labs, representatives from Posse, the Oregon State University Open Source Lab, Portland State's Computer Science Department, and the Software Association of Oregon will man booths on the exhibit floor. This from Blue Oregon.
In Coos Bay, the proposed path of a pipeline from a liquefied natural gas terminal has been changed to avoid the nearby town of Glasgow. Jeffrey Bishop, the director of the Port of Coos Bay, says the pipeline would go through and along the bay, avoiding private lots in Glasgow and a stretch through Echo Valley. The proposed liquid natural gas pipe is 3 feet in diameter. Bishop told members of the Port Commission that the company, Williams Northwest Pipeline, agreed to the change in its preferred route last week. The proposed terminal project includes a 223-mile pipeline that would cross four Oregon counties into California. The Federal Regulatory Commission is reviewing the project.
In Coos Bay, a dearth of salmon berries has brought black bears out of the woods this summer along the Oregon coast, which could be bad news for the bears. Stuart Love of the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Department said, "What's going on this year is we've had a poor salmonberry crop. Salmon berries are an important food item for bears, and when you have a poor salmonberry crop, the bears are looking for other food items." Love said the number of encounters between humans and bears is up this year as a result of the bears seeking human food in garbage cans and elsewhere. Every year, he said, at least a few black bears have to be killed. The department, he said, doesn't release bears. Love said, "We never transplant bears. There's a lot of reasons for it. One reason is biological. All bear habitats are full. We've got bears everywhere along the coast. After they've captured, they're destroyed. This from the Oregonian.
And the House approved a series of bills yesterday to protect national forest lands in the West, including the designation of new wilderness areas in three western states. The bills would create nearly 670,000 acres of new wilderness and protect 47 miles of wild and scenic rivers in California, Idaho, and Oregon, as well as a ban on drilling in northern New Mexico's Val Vidal. The bills would protect about 277,000 acres in California, 315,000 acres in Idaho, and 77,200 acres in Oregon. In all, more than 1,000 square miles of new wilderness would be created. The unanimous votes, which sent the bills to the Senate, were unusual, particularly since they involved wilderness expansion, typically a contentious process. Wilderness designation forbids commercial exploitation and motorized recreation. These bills, however, have all been in the works for years and represent compromise among groups from business owners to ranchers, local governments, recreation advocates, conservationists, and Indian tribes.
Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter said he would have a bill ready by the end of the week allowing Congress to sue George Bush in federal court. Specter is leading the legislative campaign against Bush's unprecedented use of signing statements to avoid the rule of law. On the Senate floor, Specter said, "We will submit legislation to the United States Senate, which will authorize the Congress to undertake judicial review of those signing statements with the view to having the President's acts declared unconstitutional." Specter's announcement came the same day that an American Bar Association, ABA, task force concluded that by attaching conditions to legislation, the president has sidestepped his constitutional duty to either sign a bill, veto it, or take no action. Bush has issued at least 750 signing statements during his presidency, reserving the right to revise, interpret, or disregard laws on national security and constitutional grounds. ABA President Michael Greco said that non-veto hamstrings Congress because Congress cannot respond to a signing statement. The practice, he added, is harming the separation of powers.
Hundreds of thousands of people in different parts of the U.S. continue to be affected by power outages as temperatures soar to record highs. Very few of the afflicted figured out that it had something to do with their disproportionate use of global energy sources. In California, where temperatures reached 122 degrees, the heat may have killed up to 8 people. The power grid was unable to cope with the increased demand for electricity, leading to widespread cuts. In California, Missouri, and New York, thousands are still without power after reaching high temperatures and storms last week. Early Monday, firefighters battled a soaring blaze in the Cleveland National Forest near San Diego, and hundreds of homes were evacuated. Some 100,000 power customers in California are facing further blackouts. Meanwhile, about 230,000 homes and businesses in St. Louis, Missouri, were still without power. In New York, utility workers managed to restore electricity to 22,000 customers, many whom had spent a week without power. This from the BBC.
States and cities could eventually lose $3 billion a year if Congress prohibits them from taxing companies that earn income in their states but do business without local employees or offices. The House expects to debate a bill today mandating that businesses have at least one employee in a state for 21 days or have leased or bought property to be subject to that state's business taxes. That includes taxes on business income, profits, receipts, and other figures, but not sales taxes paid by consumers. It also applies that rules to companies selling services, not just goods. Its supporters say companies need the federal government to intervene and make sense of confusing state laws, which can subject out-of-state businesses to taxes even when a company's employees or goods just pass through a state for a few days. The Congressional Budget Office, CBO, estimated that state and local governments stand to immediately lose $1 billion under the changes. The CBO also said certain industries, including media and banking, can avoid taxation even if they have a physical presence in a state. State and local governments have reacted with alarm at the size of the potential losses.
A team of scientists from the National Centers for Coastal Ocean Science, Louisiana University's Marine Consortium, and Louisiana State University is forecasting that the dead zone off the coast of Louisiana and Texas this summer will be larger than the average since 1990. NOAA predicts this summer's dead zone will be nearly 7,000 square miles, an area the half the size of the state of Maryland. The dead zone is an area in the Gulf of Mexico where seasonal oxygen levels drop too low to support most life in the bottom and near bottom waters. It is caused when algae growth is stimulated by input of nutrients such as nitrogen and phosphorus from the Mississippi and Atchala-Fala rivers. The algae settles and decays in the bottoms of the waters. The decaying algae consumes oxygen faster than it can be replenished from the surface, leading to decreased levels of dissolved oxygen. Research indicates that nearly tripling the nitrogen load into the Gulf over the past 50 years has led to the heightened Gulf of Mexico hypoxia problem. This from NOAA.
The WTO talks have collapsed as the U.S. is blamed for being inflexible. Negotiations among six key governments over a new global trade agreement collapsed, with the European Union, Brazil, India, and Japan blaming U.S. unwillingness to cut farm subsidies. The impasse led Director General of the World Trade Organization, Pascal Lamy, to suspend the five-year-old talks aimed at dismantling market barriers and stimulating global economic growth. The WTO has had aimed to seal an accord this year. The WTO is trying to cobble together an accord that would provide at least $96 billion in global tariff reductions, lower subsidies, and savings on freight costs. The U.S. didn't sweeten its offer to scale back spending on its farmers because trade partners were more concerned with protecting sensitive commodities such as beef with exemptions from tariff cuts. The collapse of the talks is seen by many rural indigenous farmers as a rare victory against a global juggernaut.
This week, the House is preparing to vote on a plan to share civilian nuclear technology with India. The critics are mounting last-ditch efforts to scuttle an accord they say obliterates the global goal of stopping the spread of nuclear weapons. Lawmakers are trying to attach conditions that, if adopted, could cause the deal to collapse. One possible proposal would require that India halt production of material that could be used to make bombs. Another would call for Bush to certify that India is cooperating to prevent Iran from getting nuclear weapons. India probably would balk at such conditions, and supporters of the plan have vowed to fight any attempts to include in the legislation what they see as deal breakers. The plan overturns decades of U.S. policy by allowing trade in nuclear fuel and technology with India in return for safeguards and inspections at India's civilian nuclear plants. Military plants would be off limits. The Bush administration is asking Congress to make an exception for India in U.S. laws that bar nuclear trade with countries that have not submitted to full international inspections.
The U.S. State Department has yet to issue a semi-annual report outlining all foreign persons known to be engaging in WMD proliferation-related activities in Iran and Syria, according to Ross Story. Three Democrats in Congress wrote yesterday to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, requesting the department issue its semi-annual report as required by the Iran-Syria Nonproliferation Act. The signatories say the report is more than 1 month overdue. It's unknown why the report has yet to be released. The State Department could not be immediately reached for comment. Democratic Congress members indicated they want to review the report before considering legislation which would facilitate President Bush's proposal for nuclear cooperation with India. The law was passed in 2005 to amend an earlier law, the Iran Nonproliferation Act of 2000. The reporting requirements, which are mentioned in the letter to Secretary Rice, require a report to Congress every 6 months. The most recent report was submitted to Congress in December of 2005.
And a fisherman is recovering from surgery after being speared in the chest and knocked into the Atlantic Ocean by a blue marlin off the Bermuda coast. This from The Guardian. Ian Card was said to be in stable condition on Sunday in hospital in the British Island Territory. Card and his father, Alan, had hooked the marlin on Saturday when it leapt out of the water, impaled Mr. Card below his collarbone, and knocked him into the ocean. His father cut the line and helped his son get back into their boat. The fishermen estimated the marlin weighed about 800 pounds and was about 14 feet long.
Israeli ground forces pushed deeper into Lebanon yesterday in fierce fighting. They captured two Hezbollah guerrillas, while two aid convoys carrying food generators and other badly needed supplies left Beirut for two southern cities. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice made a surprise visit to Beirut to launch diplomatic efforts aimed at ending 13 days of warfare. Prime Minister Fouad Saniora told her his government is hoping to put an end to the war being inflicted on Lebanon. He told Rice that Israel's bombardment was taking his country backward 50 years. An official close to Parliament Speaker Nabi Berri said his talks with Rice failed to reach an agreement because Rice insisted on one full package to end the fighting. Saniora has pleaded with Washington to press Israel to call a total ceasefire in bombardment that has demolished Lebanon's infrastructure and killed hundreds. President Bush has opposed an immediate ceasefire, saying the root cause of the conflict must be resolved. Hezbollah leader Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah said the priority for the ceasefire, and he was open to discussing ideas on ending the crisis.
Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah is issuing an appeal to the world to stop Israeli attacks on Lebanon. In a statement read on television, Abdullah said the Mideast could be plunged into war if peace efforts fail. A royal court statement said the king has pledged $1.5 billion to Lebanon, half a billion for the country's reconstruction, and the remainder for Lebanon's central bank to support the economy. While Abdullah calls the Israeli military brutal, Hezbollah has not been spared Arab criticism. Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan, and Kuwait have rebuked Hezbollah for fighting in Lebanon.
The leader of Britain's opposition, Liberal Democrats, yesterday asked Prime Minister Tony Blair to suspend arms exports to Israel. In a letter, Menzies Campbell urged Blair to halt the trade following the Israeli offensive against Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. He said that over the past 18 months, the government had licensed the exports of arms to Israel worth over $45 million, including components for naval light guns, military utility helicopters, aircraft radars, and electronic warfare equipment. Yesterday, Blair called the fighting in Lebanon a catastrophe, but he said he was confident a plan to end the violence could be reached within days. Iraq's prime minister, speaking alongside Blair at Downing Street, says he fears the fighting will only create more extremism in the region. Iraq's prime minister, Nour al-Maliki, said he feared the possible broader consequences of the fighting. Blair and President George Bush have declined to back a call for an immediate ceasefire made by the United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan.
Iraq's Prime Minister Nour al-Maliki has suggested Iraqi troops will soon take control over more areas of the country. Maliki told the BBC that predictions foreign troops will be in Iraq for decades were wide off the mark. But he admitted sectarian violence was still a major problem that Iraqis would have to confront together. Maliki met British Prime Minister Tony Blair in London and is in Washington for talks with Bush today. The leaders were expected to discuss plans to continue the handover of responsibility for security to Iraqi troops in the south of Iraq and the recent security clampdown in Baghdad after another day of deadly bombings and attacks by insurgents. Speaking alongside Maliki, Blair said Iraq's government would have at its disposal, the capacity to defeat extremism.
The Speaker of the Iraqi Parliament criticized the American government's involvement in Iraq, likening the invasion and its consequences to the work of butchers. Mahmoud al-Mashhadani demanded that the American authorities disentangle themselves from Iraq's political affairs. The Speaker, a Sunni Islamist who has a reputation for provocative public comments, also said the American government wanted Iraq to stay under the American boot. Al-Mashhadani said, "We know that there was a corrupt regime in Saddam, but a regime should be removed by surgery, not by butchering." During a speech at a United Nations-sponsored conference on transitional justice, he said, "The U.S. occupation is butcher's work under the slogan of democracy and human rights and justice." "Leave us to solve our problems," he continued. "We don't need an agenda from outside." He did not specifically call for withdrawal of American troops from Iraq. Sunni Arab leaders have increasingly said they need American troops here to protect them from Shiite militias and Shiite-led government forces. The comments by Mr. Mashhadani, one of the government's highest-ranking Sunni Arabs, could prove embarrassing for Prime Minister Nour Kamal al-Maliki, who is scheduled to visit President Bush in Washington today. This from the BBC.
Iranian dissident Akbar Ganji declined to meet White House officials during a visit to the U.S., according to the BBC. Ganji said he had been invited to discuss the current situation in Iran. The White House declined to comment. He said he rejected the offer because he believed current U.S. policies could not help promote democracy in Iran. In a speech last week in Washington, D.C., he also criticized U.S. policy in Iraq, saying, "You cannot bring democracy to a country by attacking it." He added that the war in Iraq had helped Islamic fundamentalism and hampered the democracy movement in the region. A group of Iranian dissidents met State Department officials Nicholas Burns and Elliot Abrams in Washington last week. Ganji said he believed such meetings would undermine the credibility of the Iranian opposition. He said he was in the United States not as a leader of Iran's democracy movement, but as a journalist who wanted to draw international attention to the plight of the people in Iranian jails.
In Australia, Nobel Peace Laureate Betty Williams displayed a flash of her feisty Irish spirit yesterday. Williams lashed out at President Bush during a speech to hundreds of schoolchildren. Campaigning on the rights of young people at the Earth Dialogues Forum, being held in Brisbane, Williams spoke passionately about the deaths of innocent children during wartime, particularly in the Middle East. She said, "I have a very hard time with this word nonviolence, because I don't believe that I am nonviolent. Right now I would love to kill George Bush." Her young audience at the Brisbane City Hall clapped and cheered. Williams was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize 30 years ago when she circulated a petition to end violence in Northern Ireland after witnessing British soldiers shoot dead an IRA member who was driving a car. He veered onto the footpath, killing two children from one family instantly and fatally injuring a third. Williams' petition had tens of thousands of Protestant and Catholic women walking the streets together in protest. Now the former office receptionist heads the World Centers of Compassion for Children International, a nonprofit group working to create a political voice for children. This from the Australian.
Oil giant BP has agreed an out-of-court settlement with a group of Colombian farmers over a pipeline it built. The farmers had been demanding $28 million, or about 4 days' worth of war in Iraq, in compensation, saying the Okensa pipeline had threatened their livelihoods and was a health risk. They also claimed that they had faced threats from paramilitary groups for opposing the project, though emphasized this had nothing to do with BP. The amount the farmers will be paid has not been revealed. The case, which would have been heard in London's High Court, alleged the 1990s project damaged local farming, fishing, and gold mining industries. This from the BBC and other sources.
Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez has praised Belarus, calling it a model social state like the one we are beginning to create. During a visit to Minsk, he called for a strategic alliance between Belarus to counter hegemonic capitalism. Chavez is on a world tour partly to win support for Venezuela's bid to win a seat on the UN Security Council. From Belarus, he will travel to Russia, Qatar, Iran, Vietnam, and Mali. He is hoping to sign an arms deal in Moscow worth around $1 billion. The U.S. has voiced concerns about the proposed sale, having banned such deals with Caracas for U.S. manufacturers. Chavez said, "We do not want to be deceived or exploited by anyone. We must defend the interests of the individual and not the hegemonic interests of the capitalists, wherever they may be, in Europe or in Latin America." This from the BBC.
And a top advisor to Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador said yesterday the elections should be annulled unless there is a full recount. Obrador said the conservative Felipe Calderon won't have a mandate strong enough to govern otherwise. Obrador sent a letter to Calderon urging him to support a recount while his supporters continued their increasingly combative protests, blockading the entrance of the Mexican Stock Exchange before marching to the residence of President Vicente Fox. Stock trading was not affected. The protesters aimed to pressure Mexico's Federal Electoral Tribunal to order a recount of all 41 million ballots cast on July 2nd and thereby resolve allegations of fraud involving the ballot box tally sheets. Those sheets, and not the votes inside the boxes, were tallied up in the official but still uncertified count that put Calderon ahead by a very slim margin. López Obrador's advisors say they won't be responsible if protesters turn violent. Mexican stocks opened higher Monday and rose every day last week after a string of six losses based on lingering uncertainty about the election. Calderon has said the vote was fair and that there is no legal basis for a recount.
President Evo Morales yesterday lashed out at the U.S. policy of drug certification that evaluates the cooperation of foreign countries, calling it a form of blackmail. Morales spoke a day after Vice President Alvaro Garcia Linera ended a trip to Washington to persuade the U.S. Congress to extend a preferential trade pact set to expire at the end of the year. The pact, called the Andean Trade Promotion and Drug Extradition Act, has offered zero tariffs for several Bolivian products exported to the U.S. since 2002. It was meant to reward Andean countries for their cooperation in the war against drugs. Congress is unlikely to renew the act because the U.S. government favors individual free trade agreements with countries in the region, including Peru, Colombia, Ecuador, and Bolivia. Decertification would make Bolivia ineligible for drug aid from the U.S. Last year, Washington gave Bolivia roughly $100 million to fight the drug trade. Relations between Bolivia and the U.S. have been frosty since Morales took office in January. While he has built close ties with Venezuela and Cuba, his remarks towards the U.S. have grown increasingly independent. This from the BBC.
And the United States is risking a brain drain in which its scientists will flock across the Atlantic after the EU reached a historic deal yesterday on human embryonic stem cells. A week after George Bush limited federal funds for the highly sensitive area, the EU warned Washington that disillusioned U.S. scientists will want to make the most of Europe's more liberal rules. Lord Sainsbury, Britain's science minister, said, "There are a group of American scientists who are very disillusioned. In this field, we have seen U.S. scientists coming to the U.K. If the U.S. continues to take this very negative position, I think within this field of regenerative medicine, we will see scientists come from America and from other parts of the world who would have gone to America to the U.K. instead." His remarks came after EU science ministers agreed to allow part of the union's science budget to be spent on research into human embryonic stem cells. Berlin had attempted to block the funding on the grounds that it did not want its taxpayers' money to fund sensitive research, which is subject to strict limits in Germany, this according to The Guardian. This has been the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, July 25th, 2006. Thanks for listening. Today's editor is Chris Andre, our engineer is Steve, and Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Becca Bartleson. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge on translator K246AA, and 100.7 in the Willamette Valley on translator K220HR.
And if you'd like to volunteer in the AM newsroom, call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202, or email at amnews@kboo.org.
Portland area weather today, areas of morning clouds, otherwise sunny, possible isolated thunderstorms in the afternoon, temperatures in the mid to high 80s inland, 60 to 70 on the coast, and tonight, mostly cloudy and breezy, possible evening thunderstorms, lows temperatures 55 to 60.
And coming up later this morning on KBOO...